Welcome back. I feel like a late night FM DJ. It's all rocking here at the Coast Studios. All right. Tonight, we're discussing the Davis Wilson leaked UFO documents. And next up is Richard Dolan. But before we get to that right after the break, the Apollo 11 tapes, the Apollo 11 tapes of the EV on the moon were bought for $218. And it turns out they may sell for millions after they were lost. The tapes, identified in 2008 as the only surviving original recording of the first moon landing back in 1969, are going to go up for auction this July at Sotheby's in New York, where they are expected to fetch as much as $2 million. Now, the guy that bought the tapes bought them for $218, bought a truckload of used videotape from NASA, and he was going to sell the videotapes to different production companies and allow them to just record over them so they could save some money on their videotape. How crazy is that? Well, tonight, discussing the Davis Wilson leaked UFO docs is Richard Dolan. He has been reporting on this since the story broke 3 weeks ago. We're going to go deep right after this short break. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. Welcome back, Coast to Coast AM. I am your host, Jimmy Church, standing in on this now Monday morning. You can follow me on Twitter at JChurchRadio. Any questions or comments for myself or Richard Dolan, you can post it right there. You can follow Rich at Rich Dolan, throws me for a curve, at Rich Dolan, not Richard, at Rich Dolan on Twitter. Of course, Richard Dolan is among the world's leading UFO researchers, historians, publishers. He has written a number of classics for the field, including UFOs and the National Security State in two volumes, AD After Disclosure with Bryce Abel, which discusses what would happen if U.S. UFO secrecy were to end. And his latest is UFOs for the 21st Century Mind. He also hosts two radio shows, one over on our network on KGRA, The Richard Dolan Show. And he also hosts the Eft Files. And, of course, he's the publisher at Richard Dolan Press. I would like to welcome back to Coast AM, Richard Bleepin' Dolan. Richard, good morning.
Hey, Jimmy. Good morning to you.
Happy birthday, my friend.
Yes, I woke up on my birthday morning just to do Coast to Coast with you. Happy to do it.
Yeah, so cool. 29 never looked so good, and we won't dwell on that. But happy birthday. And it's exciting to not only have your birthday, on a night that we're doing Coast, but it's what we're talking about tonight, right? The Davis Wilson leaked UFO documents. And I want to start here with you, Richard, before I ask you what was the last song that you listened to today, is this. You and I, since this broke, and briefly before it broke, have been exchanging the latest information, right? Calling, what have you got? I don't know. What have you got? This is what's happening. It's been a very, very fluid few weeks here, hasn't it? Pretty exciting.
Absolutely. It's been, in all of the years that I've been researching UFOs, been about 25 years, I would say this is the most gripping, the most energizing as well, because, look, as I was saying to you a couple of times, and I've said publicly many times, I've known since 2006 that these documents are genuine, because I was shown two pages. Sometimes I wonder if it was three, but it was definitely two pages of these documents toward the tail end of 2006. And I know what I was shown. I know exactly how I was shown them, at least at the time. The person who showed them to me was the highest caliber, impeccable source. And so I've known about it. And I've talked about it as well. This isn't something that I've hidden from the rest of the world. I've given a number of lectures where I've discussed this situation. And in fact, I talked about it with you on your Fade to Black at the end of December of 2018. The situation, I didn't mention the documents, but I did mention that I knew about this. So it's been something that's been, I've known about it, I've been aware of it for a long time. And so when those full 15 pages of documents were obtained, and initially I did not know as well as anyone else how they were obtained, but they were circulating very privately at the time. When I first was shown them in April of this year, I knew immediately this was very, very important.
I did very the, important. You and I talked about this, in that I had the opposite reaction. My reaction was, they're just too good, right? That I just thought, here we go. They're just too good. And it took me a couple of weeks to circle back and read through them again in their entirety when I really started to grasp the situation here. But you stated that this is quite possibly the biggest event in ufology, maybe in history. Now, that's
leak.
Yeah,
the biggest leak.
And I thought, and you knew what, you choose your words carefully, Richard. That's a pretty big jump, but you felt confident in saying it. Why?
Absolutely. It's very interesting. There are people out there who are very loudly, and I would have to say very ignorantly, denying that this is a legitimate leak, and they're just absolutely wrong. Not aside from the fact that there are a large number of the most credible UFO researchers who have looked at these documents who know that they are genuine. Some of them just had come to me privately and stated that they too had been shown these documents at some earlier time. So, but even if there were no other people, I had felt right from the beginning that if I were the only person on the planet to defend these documents, I would do it to my final breath. That's how strongly I know that they're genuine. But I wasn't the only one who had this reaction. Grant Cameron, who, of course, had the documents in his possession before I did earlier in 2018, knew equally immediately well just what these documents represented. He knew right away this was very important. So, yeah, I guess for me personally, why I felt that they were as powerful and as true as I knew they were is because I had been shown them in 06, and I had never forgotten the phrase that Admiral Thomas Wilson said to Dr. Eric Davis in that conversation, which was, this was technology not of this earth, not made by man, not of human hands. And, of course, that's right in on page 13 of those documents, and I had never forgotten it. So, and then, of course, we learned eventually, I was told, and I have pretty good handle on the story of how they were obtained. There are details that I do not know, and there are details that I may not ever be given, because I think the individual involved in this absolutely adamantly wants to stay private. And I realize that there are people who are frustrated by that, but you know, I can't change that situation. But these were obtained legally and above board from the files of the late astronaut Edgar Mitchell when he died in early 2016. I don't know if they were obtained in early 2016, but Dr. Mitchell died in January of 2016. And at some point after that, some, and I do not know the quantity, but some of his files were legally removed, and that included what we're seeing here.
Now, these documents are different from Freedom of Information Act documents or other government documents in that they are not electronic, number one. They look like they're JPEGs or photocopies of the original paperwork. That's the first thing. The second is they are not redacted, and there isn't any secret stamps on them or confidential stamps or initials or sign-offs. Because these are from a private individual. This is not a U.S. government document, which makes the provenance on them easy to ascertain. That's the first thing. And the second, that we're not frustrated with missing information. We have them in their entirety. And for the first time, we're dealing with this. It's a very strange feeling, isn't it?
Yeah, you're right. They're right out there in the open. We know. And I think you just said the provenance is easy to determine. I think I would agree with that. You know, this is why Grant Cameron dropped a third of the document, the third document to indicate that Edgar Mitchell is a source. And it was that was the letter from Robert Bigelow to Dr. Mitchell in the 1990s concerning the upcoming NIDS meeting. So I think Grant did that just to kind of give a context of where these were all coming from. But, yeah, these were, you know, you could just see how this would happen. In the early 2000s, you've got Edgar Mitchell, you've got a number of group of individuals, all of them very close to each other. Edgar Mitchell, Dr. Hal Puthoff, Dr. Eric Davis, Dr. Kit Green, Dr. Colm Kelleher, Robert Bigelow himself, and this is a group of people. John Alexander would be part of this at times, and who shared a very strong interest in the UFO subject, who were attempting, you know, you can easily see this, attempting to work their way through this labyrinth, as it were, of UFO secrecy. My take on this is that these gentlemen were not at the center. They were not at the core secret of what was going on in the phenomenon, but they knew enough that it was real. They knew enough that it was very, very important, and they wanted to get to the center. This is how I interpret it. Dr. Green may, of all of them, have had a little bit more, perhaps, because he was high level in the CIA and had possibly, I would say, the best of these connections. But it's likely that all of them were working their way in, and my sense of this is that you see them communicating to each other quietly, learning what they can learn, getting and sharing information that they are able to share with each other. And I think that's what these documents are representing. This and also the now infamous leaked alien autopsy emails where they're talking about the Ray Santilli video. Same thing. They're having these discussions. That was in 2001. And I'm sure, I mean, I don't know this, but I have to think that there are countless other subjects equally interesting that these gentlemen were discussing amongst themselves that are probably in Dr. Mitchell's possession. And whether they'll come out or not is something that I have no idea.
Yeah, do you think they're in panic mode? I mean, if one document is leaked, then a second, of course, and then we have Commander Miller's letter included in this package too as well, and then this right. other set of documents that was just released by Grant Cameron. I'm sure if I was a member of this group, you have to wonder, you know, how much more is out there and who is doing the leaking. I would think they would be in panic mode.
Absolutely. I'm sure panic mode, damage control, lie low mode, all of that I think is what you see in issuing the standard kinds of no comments, although not exactly standard no comments.
Well, let's get into that, actually. Specifically, sure. You in your research, you know Hal Puthoff, and he's mentioned in this letter or in this document, and you right. reached out to Hal. What was his reply, if we can talk about it?
Yes, I can. I asked him, you know, you mind if I repeat, publish what you said? He said, fine. On June 12th, so very, very early into all of this, I asked him for some kind of comment, and, you know, he gives me a formal no-comment statement, which I can read right here. I've got it in front of me. He just says, with regard to authenticity, we have no comment on the documents recently being circulated. As some of us still retain U.S. government security clearances, and remain bound by the secrecy oaths we have taken, we believe it is in the best interest of the United States government and ourselves not to comment on any documents that purport to describe classified U.S. government programs or information. And that's it. So that's one of the most detailed no-comment statements that you could ask for, and I'm actually very grateful that Dr. Puthoff sent it to me. It's I consider it a friendly gift to those people who are willing to read it carefully and understand the position.
I
comment with an explanation.
Right. And I received virtually the same reply from Dr. Eric Davis when I asked him to comment on it as well. What I did find interesting was the inclusion of the word we, which is indicating us, you know, our group. We're still bound by oaths and security. And I get that and I respect that. But the other part about this, Richard, and I want your comment, is if they were to deny that the documents were real, right, what would that have to do with the security oath or a clearance? Wouldn't they be able to say the documents aren't real? Isn't a no comment the same thing as saying, well, I can't say that they're real. We just can't comment on it.
Yes, correct. I think that's exactly what they could do. And in fact, arguably, when you're talking about these types of programs, these special access programs, and I assume that when you were talking about this with Dr. Stephen Greer earlier, you guys got into the actual contents of these notes. And what Admiral Wilson was telling Dr. Davis back in 2002 is his failed attempt to gain access to a special access program after he learned about it from Stephen Greer's briefing in 97. He learned about a special access program to reverse engineer ET technology. And because of his authority in the Joint Chiefs of Staff, he was deputy head of intelligence at that time, later became head of intelligence. He at least seemed legally to have regulatory authority over that program, or at least to be able to see what was going on there. And this was a program that he described in the notes as very deeply hidden, easy to miss. Very easy to miss. He only found it after he asked around in the Pentagon, including former Secretary of Defense William Perry, who gave advice on where to look. And so Wilson looked, found it, and eventually found the program manager, the corporate attorney, and the security manager, and they collectively denied him access. This is a private firm. This is not DOD personnel. Speculation is that the private firm is Lockheed Martin, although it's not been confirmed. And they just said, no, we determine the criteria. He's like, what's the criteria? So they said, we determine it. You don't determine it. You're out. And he went to complain. They actually said, if you want to complain, be our guest. They didn't seem to care. He did complain and was told, if you want to keep this up, your career is going to suffer. You'll take an early retirement. You'll never make director of DIA, and you'll lose one or two stars along the way. And so that cooled his heels. He was very upset about it. So these are the contents of the notes, and so we're talking about a highly classified special access program. And I'm circling back to your question here: why these were no comments instead of denials? Because in truth, they could have had denials. When you're talking about these programs, and this was written about years and years ago by an author named Bill Sweetman, who did an article on black budgets back in 2000. And he pointed out that an unacknowledged special access program, that is a black program, is a program which is considered so sensitive that the fact of its existence is a core secret. And that means a core secret is actually defined in the U.S. Air Force regulations as any item, progress, strategy, or element of information the compromise of which would result in unrecoverable failure. So in other words, revealing the existence of a black program would undermine its military value. And a no comment for some of these is even a breach of security. And this is a statement emphasized by Edgar Mitchell himself back in 2008. In other words, you can't just say no comment for some of these. You really, that would be a breach. So you would have to categorically deny it. Deny its existence.
And
so the fact that these gentlemen are not denying it. They're just
right.
Saying no comment is very interesting.
Yeah, is just replying is a comment, right?
Right.
Just that simple side of it. Well, we need to take a break right here, birthday guy. So we'll do just that. But we are talking tonight about the amazing, revealing Davis Wilson leaked UFO documents. Our guest, Richard Dolan. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Coast AM, standing in on this now Monday morning. I'm your host, Jimmy Church. Our guest is Richard Dolan, and we're discussing the Davis Wilson leaked UFO documents. And Richard, you wanted to have another comment on the no comment.
Yeah. I just want to say this. So when I was talking about how in special access programs, a no comment doesn't suffice frequently, and you have to issue an actual denial. But and people might wonder, well, why didn't Puthoff and Davis issue those denials as well if they were actually, bound by those oaths? And the fact is that they were not part of those special access programs. So it's very important to distinguish this. They learned about this program from Wilson. They were not part of that program, and so by that, understanding, they do not have to issue the out-and-out denial that someone who would be part of the program would be expected to issue, if you understand. And I think as a result of that, these gentlemen were going as far as they needed to go, but they were not going any farther and were certainly not issuing a denial. They implicitly, it's obvious to me, they implicitly know that this program is real. But it's difficult for them, and they're embarrassed. By the way, I would have to assume over this leak. I mean, these are gentlemen, all of whom had different types of security clearances. They're sharing information, and then it gets out, it leaks out, like guaranteed. And from their point of view, that should never have happened. And so now they're in a point of thinking, well, will this affect our own security clearances or our own ability to ferret out further information into all of this? So you see, it's just basically a matter of lying very, very low and saying as little as they need to say.
Well, in your research and the way that you work at things, certainly in writing National Security State Volumes 1 and 2, looking at documents, looking at how the National Security State deals with these subjects, now you are presented with, 15 pages of pretty explosive information in it. Now you need to go and research and start to figure out what was going on. How did you start to approach this?
Yeah. Well, the first thing that I did is had a long conversation with a number of other researchers, basically comparing notes. So Grant Cameron, had a chat with Linda Moulton Howe, who has her own background into some of these issues. Melinda Leslie, who actually has been researching a lot of the people involved in that circle for many years. A lot of folks don't realize that. And she had a lot of information to share with me about Jack Houts, who's one of that crew of individuals, essentially. She's had some long conversations with Jim Semivan of TTSA, who gave her, by the way, and she was fine with me saying this, basically a 43-minute long no comment, which itself was a very, very interesting and carefully worded series of statements. So starting out with other researchers, getting a sense of where they're at with all this, I've got a number of individuals that I've been talking with. One was James Rakeney, who I interviewed on my program a few weeks ago. James is one of the closest people to the source of this leak, and he's an Australian man, architect, extremely good man, ethical, lots of integrity. And getting a lot of the story from James and repeating what is appropriate for me to repeat. And again, I just have to say, to people who want every single thing right now, it's not for me to give up the identity of the core individual who's got this, and I'm never going to do it. But
wait, are you suggesting? Do you know who leaked the documents?
No, I don't.
Oh, okay.
I don't know that person.
Okay.
But I know that James at least does know, and he's just not going to tell, so I don't know. Nor do I know how much that individual actually has. I mean, I don't have a crystal clear idea anyway, so. But then, it's a matter of going through other areas of probing this. I did a series of back-and-forth emails with Dr. Kit Green, the day that the leaked alien autopsy emails came out, because he's the most prominent person indicated in those. And that was actually really interesting for me, because I've had a few communications with Kit Green over the years, and you're really not going to find a more intelligent, precise individual in the way that he says anything at all, actually. He's an incredibly, incredibly smart man, high-level former CIA intelligence agent, obviously still has all those connections. But, you know, here's Kit Green in 2001 talking to these folks, saying not only that he thought the Santilli film was real — that's a whole other thing that's opened up a whole big can of worms — but to me, the important thing in that email isn't his opinion of the film. It's that he stated back in 1987 and 1988 that he was briefed by a uniformed officer at the Pentagon on a alien autopsies and alien bodies, was shown an autopsy report of an alien, he said, and stated that he was shown an image of an alien that he, in his words, was identical to the Santilli alien, but only in 1987-88. That's the thing that got my attention.
Well, that would predate the Santilli film by 7 years.
That's right, and that's an astonishing thing to read. And I just want people to understand, I'm not making a statement one way or the other about the Santilli film, and lots of folks have shown that that was manufactured by Ray Santilli and his group of people. But when Kit Green is saying he was shown an image that was identical, that is something that's important to me to get to the bottom of. And I want to make this statement so that people who are denying these, leaks of being genuine, that when I went back and forth with Kit Green about it that day, here's what he didn't do. He didn't deny that the emails were genuine. Not at all. He just said, no, why are you dredging this up? That thing was shown to be a hoax. And I wrote back, I said, well, that's not really what I'm writing to you about. I'm writing as to find out why you wrote that you attended this meeting at the Pentagon and were briefed in 1987 or 1988. And his answer was that they gave him a dishonest briefing at the Pentagon.
What does that mean? What does that mean?
They lied to him. And I just think there's something not right here. And I have a lot of respect for him. I don't want to make this sound like I'm going after him. I'm not at all. But there was something that did not sit right with me in that explanation. And so, you know, where I'm left in an unsatisfactory position with that. But the fundamental thing is that he didn't deny that those emails were genuine. And that leak of those emails is the exact same source as the leak of the Davis notes with Admiral Wilson, that is, the files of Edgar Mitchell. So here's Kit Green not denying those emails, but confirming to me anyway, at least implicitly, that yes, those emails are genuine, but that the meaning, that he was wrong, essentially.
Is there portions of this — I'm going to bring up a few points here — is there indications of truth and facts in these documents, and then indication of pure disinformation? So now you're mixing both into the documents, such as alien abductions aren't real, but UFOs are. That's a bizarre thing to include in this conversation. One, two, suddenly we're talking about the Ray Santilli alien abduction film, and that is coming back into play, and it shouldn't even be part of this conversation, but it is part of the document leak. What are we dealing with here, Richard?
Well, okay, so the first thing, let's talk about the whole within the Wilson Davis notes, about the fact that in those notes on page 15, it was stated Thomas Wilson spoke to a man named Jack Gansler, who has recently passed away. He was very prominent within the Department of Defense, and Wilson runs into him. Gansler had been briefed, apparently, on this, and after the meeting that Wilson had with the Deep Black program to study reverse engineer ET tech, Gansler says, yes, UFOs are real, abductions are not real. This is Wilson telling Davis that this is what Gansler told him. So we have a few things here. There's no reason to think that Wilson wasn't in the back of a car with Davis or in the front of a car with Davis telling him this. That probably happened. The thing we really have to ask ourselves is, was Gansler telling Wilson the truth? Did Gansler know the truth and lie? Or did Gansler himself believe that this was the truth and that's what he told Wilson? In other words, Gansler had wrong information, or is Gansler right? Are there no alien abductions the way that we understand them to be taking place? I mean, all of these are in play here.
Right.
And, you know, abduction researchers are going to say to you, well, obviously abductions are happening. There are, of course, people even who believe in UFOs who do not believe in abductions. That's hard for some people to remember. But there are researchers who don't believe that abductions are actually genuine. Personally, I believe that there are such things as abductions, and so I ask myself, well, what does this mean? And I don't know what it means, but I think it's entirely possible that even within a place like the Pentagon, you've got different levels of clearance, you've got different levels of understanding about this. I will say, you know, long ago, and I wish I could tell the name of this individual. Maybe soon I will. But I had a conversation many years ago with a gentleman who had spoken. He said to me he'd spoken with 18 former U.S. presidents, heads of CIA and Department of Defense chiefs and undersecretaries, 18 of those people over in his retirement about UFOs and ETs and the like. And he said a small amount of them said, UFOs, what are you crazy? What's wrong with you? Another very small amount said, oh, yes, I was briefed on that. And a much larger amount said, UFOs, I've been wanting to get information on that all this time, and I've gotten nothing. What do you know? And so the implication is that even at the highest levels of our hierarchy of power, of official power, you should say, that most of these guys are locked out of the truth. And so I don't really know how much Jack Gansler really knew when he's telling this to Wilson. He may have been telling him the truth as far as he knew, and maybe that truth is correct, but maybe it was incorrect.
And then the Ray Santilli film, The Alien Abduction, which, in case there's anybody out there that doesn't know what we're talking about, it was a film that was released. It was live on television. I believe it was Fox around 1995, and the film was released on videotape, which I purchased for an extraordinary amount of money back in 1995, and was revealed to be a hoax. Now, we have to interject the word allegedly in all of this conversation, but my eyes said one thing to me when I first saw the videotape on my TV screen back in 1995. That's the first thing. But now for it to surface being part of this document leak, it allows the out for anybody else going, well, they're talking about Santilli, and so the rest of this has just got to be gibberish too. And that's this give and take with information.
Right. If you're thinking, they've got to think about this in the way that it actually is. What you've got is a group of gentlemen, a group of men, scientists mostly, having conversations among themselves. And so they talk about a lot of different things. So they talked about Davis's meeting with Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
They had this discussion in 01 about the Santilli film. And, you know, I'm sure there are other conversations that they had as well, because that's what they do. They talk about these things. So those are two documents that leaked out because they're interesting, right? It's an interesting conversation, both of them, for us to follow what these very smart, very well plugged in guys who are trying to ferret out the truth happened to be talking about nearly 20 years ago. So I think that's why it came out. This isn't to validate or invalidate, for that matter, the Santilli film. It's just, it reminds us actually that back in the late 90s, there were a number of defenders of that film. And sometimes it's easy to forget that there were arguments.
No, there certainly were, Richard. There certainly
was an autopsy procedure.
There certainly were a lot of defenders, and there are currently defenders of the film.
Yeah.
But what I found interesting in that document, I had to go back and read it. You and I have discussed this now a few times. I had to go back and reread that document a few times to make sure that Kit Green was talking about the Santilli film. I was thinking he saw a separate film, and maybe he was comparing that film with the Santilli film.
It's possible. It's possible, yeah. I mean, in his opinion, I think that there were several versions of something floating around, and I don't know. I don't have the exact understanding of what he was really thinking here. But, yeah, I don't really know what they were thinking. I don't know what he was saying about the Santilli film, other than in his opinion at that time. This is back in 01. He thought it was genuine. And as I mentioned just a little while ago, he recently, when all of this blew up, he wrote to me, and I have a statement. He just says, no, that was proven to be a hoax. I don't see why you're bringing this up with me. I don't have anything else to say about it. And then I wrote back to him, and I just said, well, I understand your position on this, but I'm much more interested in the briefing that you stated you had in 1987 and 88 and so forth. And, you know, to me, that's interesting. And the other thing to point out is that there have been stories and stories and stories back in the 50s and 60s and 70s and 80s, many of them acquired by the late researcher Leonard Stringfield, about people who witnessed films of alien autopsies. And this isn't really the first time it showed up. Stringfield interviewed one guy, comes to mind immediately, who said to him that as a, I think a radar man or worked, it was at Fort Monmouth, New Jersey in the 1950s, was brought into a military movie theater. He just said, I want you to go in here and watch this. He was in a room with a few other people, shown a film of an alien autopsy, 1950s this was. And at the end of it, the lights go on, they're all ushered out, no one gets a debriefing. 2 weeks later, an intelligence officer walks up to him and says, that film you saw, that was a hoax, forget about it. And it just perplexed this guy ever since. He's like, what the heck happened to me? And I've wondered about this myself many, many times, and I just wondered if he was being tested to be brought into such a program, if one program like that existed. Maybe this is a form of recruiting, and they wanted to see if he passed the test or not. Maybe he did something to make them think, no, we don't want him. I don't know, but the fact is that was one alien autopsy story that was floating around that dated from the 50s.
Well, it reminds me, and we've got to cut to a break here, Richard, but it reminds me, I hate to bring it up, but Richard Doty, his comments to me very directly about being shown film too as well in a room full of people concerning all of this and, of course, Roswell. Our guest tonight is Richard Dolan. We're discussing the Davis Wilson leaked UFO documents. This is Coast to Coast AM. We'll be right back.